ready to go. Ready to go. And welcome back. Time is 9:06. Nice start on this Monday morning in North Central Wisconsin. From our downtown Wausau studios at the corner of Washington Street and North 3rd Street, currently 62 degrees with a few clouds out there. I am Chad Holmes. It is hour number two of the Chad Holmes Show on 98.9 and 1230 WXCO, online at BowFallsRadio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. And again, you can also join us by going to Facebook.com, the Bow Falls Radio page. You can see a video stream. Join us that way as well. So, again, glad you could be with us here on this Monday morning. Hopefully it was a terrific week, and hopefully it'll be a great week. It's going to be a busy week. Again, the Democratic National Convention. We are 78 days away from Election Day, 11 weeks and one day. So, convention, we'll see whether or not Kamala Harris and Tim Walz get a bump. Sometimes you get a bump in the polls, which I don't talk about. But at the very least, get some momentum, get some positive feel from the voters. Because you basically have 4 days and four nights where you're the focus, where the media comes in and they focus on the activities going on in Chicago with the Democrats. And the hope is you have a smooth convention, you bring out the best in your party, and people are feeling good about the party when you leave on Thursday. And coming up tonight, it will be a big night. The President of the United States, Joe Biden, will be speaking to the convention. And
hooray.
And it's going to be, I think, a little bit more emotional than normal because the president stepped away, and obviously there's been a momentum with the new ticket with Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, but at the same time, it was not easy. No, Joe Biden has been somebody that's been in the forefront of American politics since 1972. He was elected to the United States Senate from the state of Delaware in 1972. At the time, he was only 29 years old. In fact, when he got elected, he was 29. You have to be 30 to serve. So literally, he got into the Senate at the very earliest moment on his 30th birthday, was able to start serving in the United States Senate.
He has led quite a record and a lot of experience over those years up till now. And
he spoke on Thursday last week with the vice president, and he talked about how when he first started, he was too young, and now he's too old. And he made it as a joke. But I think there's something that's still there that it's not easy. I've read that there's been a little bit of a rift between him and the former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, as Pelosi was one of those that was working to push him out of the race, if you want to use those terms. But at the same time, I've also been reading that the president realizes that in the end it's the right thing to do, but it's still not easy when you have the power of the presidency, when you have the delegates. He had the delegates. He went through the process of the primaries. He had the delegates. If he had decided, nope, I don't care what everybody's saying. I don't care. I'm still going to run for president. He could have done it, and he would have got the nomination, and the party would have been probably very splintered. It would have been a very difficult convention. There would have been a lot of talk about the splintered Democratic Party. But instead, the president stepped up. He decided that now was the time to hand the baton off to Kamala Harris. He did it in an exceptionally smooth way. It reminded me, because watching the Olympics a couple of weeks ago, there was a relay race where the United States was expected to win. But they had a terrible handoff of the baton. Ooh. And ultimately they got disqualified because the handoff came outside the area where it's supposed to happen. And even if it happened within the area, the handoff was so poor, they would not have won anyways. So the handoff was the reason, a poor handoff was the reason they did not win the race. But the handoff between President Biden and Vice President Harris was ideal. It was perfect. He said, I'm not running for president. And he said at the same time, I'm endorsing Kamala Harris. Because if he had not, it could have been wide open. It could have been a battle where just about a bunch of Democrats jumped in and had a basically a wrestling match over a couple of weeks to try to get the nomination. Instead,
it could have been a lot messier.
Yes. And instead, the infrastructure of the Biden campaign was transferred to the Harris campaign and has been working very, very perfectly. So again, I am a huge fan of Joe Biden. I think what he has been able to accomplish, not just in the last 3.5 years, but during the entirety of his political career, his work with President Obama, his work in the United States Senate. I mean, the man has been an incredible public servant. And tonight, he will speak at the Democratic National Convention. I'm sure it will be an overwhelmingly positive response from the delegates and everybody else. But you know it's going to be, I think, at the same time, very difficult for him as well. So I'm very curious to see this speech. The First Lady, Jill Biden, will also be speaking tonight as well. And it's going to be a very quick start to the convention when you have the president speaking on the first night, when you have the First Lady. And the theme for tonight at the DNC is coming together. It's first night. That's what they're going to call it. I mean, every night they have a theme. And every convention, the Republicans had a theme every night. The Democrats will have a theme tonight and every night as well. And in fact, there's going to be a virtual roll call as well. So Vice President Harris will be officially becoming the nominee for president during that roll call today. And it's going to be an interesting night. It's going to be an interesting convention. And again, everybody can keep up the speed throughout the day and the night. Shows will be broadcasting live from Chicago. I know that Pat Kreitler will be in Chicago starting tomorrow. I know that I'm pretty certain that Jane Mataneer will be in Chicago for her show starting at 10 o'clock. I know that Todd Alba is in Chicago as well. The Devil's Advocates will be in Chicago. So basically, much, if not all, the programming, except for this show. I'm still in Wausau. I'm not in Chicago. But most of the other programming during the course of the broadcast day will be emanating from Media Row in Chicago at the United Center for the Democratic National Convention. So
I hope the DNC, you know, keeps the focus on the issues and not like the RNC did with just like celebrities and just so. It was a lot of showmanship at the...
Are you saying that that having Hulk Hogan speak is not a focus on the issues?
Well, I'm not...
I'm being sarcastic.
Well, I'm not saying that...
I don't think Hulk Hogan is known as a policy wonk.
Yeah, just...
So yeah.
I hope that the media does a good coverage on the DNC as well, because they did a lot of coverage in the RNC, which I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but
no, I think, you know, they will.
Both parties deserve equal amounts of coverage, and just it shouldn't be all about the flash and just the, you know, just a showmanship or like, you know, as an actor, like, you know, your presence on the stage, but it should also be like. You said there was a theme. It's a coming together. That's what it should be about. It's talking about the issues, trying to bring people together to work on the problems and try to make things better for all people and not just certain people.
And also, I think it's going to be interesting to contrast the speakers. You have President Biden. You'll have the former president, Barack Obama. The former president, Bill Clinton. You'll have
Kamala Harris is going to be there on a Thursday, I believe, in person.
Kamala will have her acceptance speech on Thursday. Tim Walz will have his acceptance speech on Wednesday. You'll see, again, a party that is coming together, a party that knows the stakes in this election. And also, again, we will hear about issues because that is important. That's why Brian Ebert, we're going to talk to a doctor from Marshfield coming up about what we heard last week means. And again, so often I think the what has been accomplished legislatively, again, infrastructure, and what that has done in order to keep the economy growing. The United States economy has outpaced every other economy in the world post-pandemic. One of the big reasons is the Infrastructure Act and the way it was set up and implemented by the president. Also, again, the Inflation Reduction Act. If you look at the charts, inflation, you hear all the time from the Republicans about inflation, which was very, very difficult for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not because Joe Biden spending too much money, which is what the Republicans are saying. If you look at the charts, the United States, when it comes to inflation, like the economy, inflation, they are outpacing lower inflation than everyone else. This was a worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah.
Coming out of the pandemic, it was going to be difficult. There were going to be bumps in the road.
Oh, absolutely.
The idea that you could go through a global pandemic and not have any pain is ridiculous. You try to do your
bounce back right away.
You try to do your best to make sure that the economy comes back in a smooth way. You don't have a major dip, and that's exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. How many times over the years since Biden became president did you hear about either Republicans or media members, "Oh, coming is a recession. Coming is a recession. Coming is a recession." It never came. It's because of the way that these policies were implemented. There is a method to what has been done. There is a madness to what Trump and the Republicans are saying they want to do with Project 2025 and other ideas that they would try to implement over the next 4 years. So again, we're going to talk to Brian Ewer. What does it mean to lower these drug prices? What does it mean for the average Wisconsinite and the average American? So Brian Ewer, doctor for more than 30 years out of Marshfield, we're going to delve into what it means, the announcement from the president and the vice president from last week. The time is 9:18. I'm Chad Holmes with Ian Welsh. Chad Holmes Show, 98.9 WXCO. Chad Holmes Show, 98.9, 1230 WXCO, BowFallsRadio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Last Thursday was the first joint appearance between President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris since the president decided not to run for re-election. And it wasn't a campaign rally, per se. There was a lot of joy with it, first time they were together. But the reason they chose this venue in Maryland was to announce that there's going to be some big savings for average Americans when it comes to their prescription drug prices. As part of the Inflation Reduction Act, which was passed 2 years ago, the United States government is able to negotiate with the drug companies. And they had not been able to do that previously. And through these negotiations, there will be some significant savings for Americans on their prescription drugs. It's a big issue. And again, we need to talk about these issues as we run up for the last 11 weeks heading towards November. And to talk about this issue, had a chance on Friday afternoon to hook up with Brian Ewert. He is a doctor from Marshfield. He has been a doctor for more than 30 years, and he knows this. He's dealt with these issues and wanted to find out a little bit more about what this means, the opportunity to see these drug prices lowered because of the negotiations put into the law a couple of years ago. So here's my discussion with Brian Ewert.
and to talk a little bit about what this means. Very happy to welcome from Central Wisconsin as well, a kidney doctor here in Central Wisconsin for 30 years, Brian Ewerton. Doctor, thank you for spending a few minutes with me.
Oh, Chad, thank you for the invitation. It's great to be able to have the conversation.
You've been obviously involved in working with average folks in Central Wisconsin for, as I said, 30 years to be able to provide health care. And you've seen how hard, I imagine, over these 30 years, how any changes when it comes to health care, it is very difficult. There's a lot of, you call, roadblocks in there to make significant changes. And we finally saw under President Obama and Vice President Biden, the Affordable Care Act pushed through very difficult, very tight votes. And then we've seen here during the last administration with the president and the vice president making, again, big changes against very, I would say, high odds. When you are able to make change like this, to be able to save 40, 50, 60, 70, 80% on these drugs that especially older Americans need, what does it mean for the average person here in Central Wisconsin?
Well, it's life-saving. You know, so I started medical school 42 years ago. So I've witnessed this really story where when I started medical school, we had pharmaceuticals and we had some techniques. And dialysis existed. Dialysis had been actually paid for through Medicare for about 12 years when I started medical school. But clearly, there were a lot of diseases that progressed no matter what, because we didn't have the tools to change the course of the disease. We had some, but not very many. And really, there has been just a revolution in many parts of medical care over the time of my career, where we now have the tools to truly change the future of patients. And so, particularly with various pharmaceuticals, and in my disease in particular, the kidney failure, it really has changed it. So now that for many people, kidney failure is not a definite destiny that they have to go down, there are things to be done to change it, but it involves being able to have certain pharmaceuticals, certain drugs. And as those drugs became available, now the problem gets to be is that we may have the solution available, but now can the patient afford the solution? And in fact, over the last couple of years, when I've been involved in meetings, we have this discussion all the time. It's like, great, we have these wonderful medicines, and two of them are on the list that Vice President Harris and President Biden negotiated lower price for. Those drugs truly change people's lives and keep them off dialysis, which is a huge personal saving. It is incredibly burdensome. It removes over half of a person's life expectancy to go on to dialysis. It's worse than most cancers in terms of what it does to shorten lives. So keeping people off dialysis is hugely important for the individual person. But of course, as you noted, it's also hugely important for the federal budget because it saves $6 billion, just these 10 drugs. That's how big of an impact this is. So this is a life-changing event for patients who I take care of.
Let me ask you about maybe even broadening it out, because you talk about life-saving. And that is ultimately the biggest factor here, is to allow better health for more people. But often nowadays, for many years, in fact, in this battle to try to lower prescription drug prices, people have to make a choice, have to either choose to get expensive drugs that could ultimately cause issues for your budget. And there's different kinds of health. There's health of the body and there's health of your family budget. Oh. And if you have a bad budget, that can lead to bad health bodily wise because you're so worried about it.
Yeah.
Being able to have the opportunity to get life-saving medications, life-saving drugs, and not have it put you into incredible debt where you have to cut back on other aspects that your family needs is also a huge factor, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it has its other ramifications, because certainly when people can't afford their medicines, usually it's because they're having to make very difficult decisions. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are times on making rounds in the dialysis center that we're talking about getting people to the food pantries. That's how economically fragile some people's lives become. And so when you then start talking about these types of medications, they become out of reach and people could not utilize them. So it does, it has other benefits. It just removes the stress of needing to decide. It's like, are we going to pay the rent? Are we going to buy the medicines? Am I going to stretch out my medicines? Am I going to take it part-time and only get part of the benefit? People did all kinds of things to try and figure out. And as providers, we could sometimes go through a rather laborious process of trying to fill out forms to help people get other to get their medicines at a lower price. But it puts a tremendous burden on providers who, you know, already are short on time. And then the question is, will your provider, does your provider have time to fill out a bunch of forms and get them to the right place and go through all the process of basically begging a pharmaceutical company to release the medicine for a lower price?
We will have more of my discussion with Brian Ewert, again, doctor here in Central Wisconsin for more than 30 years. Again, try to delve a little bit more into what it means. Policy. What does policy mean? What does the policy that the president and the vice president push through to allow the government to negotiate drug prices? What is it going to mean? And we're going to continue this discussion coming up after this information update. We'll get the latest news, weather, and sports, and then come back with more with Brian Ewert, Dr. Brian Ewert, coming up. I'm Chad Holmes. It is the Chad Holmes Show on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. Online at bullfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app. And welcome back, Chad Holmes with you here on 98.9 WXCO. Continuing a discussion I had Friday afternoon with Dr. Brian Ewert of Marshfield about the changes where the federal government is now able to negotiate with drug companies to lower prescription drug prices. What about those poor drug companies? Does this mean they're going to be going into bankruptcy because they're not going to be getting as much profit from their sales here in the United States? Well, I asked that to Brian Ewert.
No, I mean, clearly they're very lucrative businesses. They can afford to spend 30% more on advertising than they're spending on research and development. So first of all, I mean, clearly they're not having to scrimp too much to push ads and to so that we have people who know the jingles of their meds, even when they can't afford their meds because they see the ads all the time on the television. You know, I think, you know, part of this gets, and I realized the U.S. government through Medicare Part D was like the only entity that couldn't negotiate drug prices. Right. Even the Veterans Administration could negotiate drug prices. All of the large insurance companies negotiate drug prices. So United Healthcare, they don't pay market price when they provide a pharmacy program. They tell Big Pharma, it's like, come to the table, folks, because one of you is going to get a really good contract for millions of customers, and the others of you are going to walk out of here empty-handed. So start lowering your price for us. This is just the way business is done in healthcare as you negotiate the price. And this wasn't by mistake that this happened. This wasn't an oversight. This was built in by the Republicans when they first passed Medicare Part D. The representative in the House of Representatives, the Republican, went from the House of Representatives after he shepherded Medicare Part D through under George W. Bush back in the early aughts. After he shepherded the legislation through, he left Congress and took a job as a lobbyist for the pharmaceutical industry. He was taken care of very well. They showed their appreciation how he protected their prices. Unfortunately, he hurt my patients when he protected their prices.
When Vice President Harris and President Biden were talking in Maryland, making this announcement in the recent days, talked about taking on Big Pharma and winning. That is not easy. And also, when you do something, you got to have that will to do it. If you don't have the will to do it, nothing's going to happen. And that is a big difference right now. There is a will that we've seen the administration have to lower these prices, to lower these drug prices, to give, as you said, just incredible amounts, 40 to 80% we're hearing. If the Republicans are back in power, there's no will, is there?
Well, clearly they've stated as part of Project 2025, which all of Trump's former advisors have been part of, and he's praised the organization who wrote it. So, I mean, this is his plan. Repealing the Inflation Reduction Act is right there in Project 2025. This is what they will plan to do. And even though it's, this is the act that made this possible to do. And like I say, it was only because of Vice President Harris's vote that our patients are getting this benefit. So I think it's very important for people to realize there's one party that really looks to see how can we help people. And there's another party who looks to see how can we enrich corporate profits no matter how many people get hurt. I mean, to Vice President Harris's and President Biden's and the Democratic Party's credit, they're standing on the shoulders of other giants. I mean, this goes back to trust busting that, you know, it was coming out of the late 1800s, finally realized like corporate interests are growing large and powerful. They provide public good, but they need guardrails, because without guardrails, they will maximize their own greed and profits over the benefit of society.
That's a very
happened with the trust busting. It happened under President Roosevelt in the 1930s. They had to bust up the aluminum monopolies for the same reason. So that this whole idea of breaking up monopolies and taking on large corporate interests that start hurting Americans, there's a longstanding tradition, and yay for Vice President Harris and President Biden for being solidly in that tradition of looking out for ordinary Americans, not for the profits and greed of the corporations.
What a wonderful point you made. We know when it's basically the Wild West. When you hear about regulations all the time being bad, no, sometimes you need rules, because otherwise the greed aspect, it's natural for some folks. I understand it, but at the same time, having a rule or two is actually vitally important. One of the aspects that we've heard a lot from the administration is the insulin cap, $35 insulin cap. Mm-hmm. And I've heard Republicans say, oh, no, that's not that important. What has it meant for people? You're obviously a doctor. What has that meant for people having the insulin cap?
So first of all, it means that people who have diabetes have their diabetes under control, which means they don't end up in the dialysis center. People who get excellent care of their diabetes do not develop kidney failure from their diabetes. I mean, it's extremely rare. In fact, in Scandinavia, people almost don't get kidney failure from diabetes anymore because they've got all the structures in place to make sure people get great care. So we're headed down that path. We're going to catch up with the Scandinavians, which is a great thing. So I talked to the medical director for the free clinic here in Marshfield, and she said that since the insulin cap came in, the demand for the services at the free clinic plummeted because they used to have pipelines. They used their donated dollars, and they had other ways in which they would get insulin at the free clinic that then people could receive. And she said they had people with insurance. They had people who are otherwise, you know, getting into the middle class, but not comfortably in the middle of the middle class, but at least they'd crossed over, but they couldn't afford their insulin. So they came to the free clinic only to get their insulin. She said, since the insulin cap went in, the demand for their services has evaporated. And I will say that when we take care of people through those kinds of structures, that's a sign of a healthy society. When we take care of people by putting a pickle jar at the checkout counter at the local diner, that's a sign of a sick society. So we do this by making sure that people don't have to beg for the care that they should get. They don't have to find charitable organizations to provide their care. We do it by strengthening our communities, that we lift all of us up and making sure people with diabetes get the care they need so they don't develop the downstream complications of blindness and amputations and kidney failure.
Again, we're talking to Brian Ewert, the kidney doctor in Central Wisconsin for 30 years. And I think, again, that is such a vital point, that when we're giving folks an opportunity to get vaccines for free, if you're a senior, if you have, again, the opportunity to cap those out-of-pocket prescription drug costs, you're also giving people an opportunity to stay healthier. Then you're saving money within the whole system. And that's one of the aspects of the system that healthcare reform has been trying to do. It's not just to allow people to not go bankrupt if you get sick, but also allow them to be healthier and make generally America healthier, which is also good economically, isn't it?
Yes. Well, and you know, we talked about dialysis and how once people are on dialysis, they lose over half of their life expectancy. But during that time, the cost of that is minimally $100,000 a year. And so it's a huge expense. I mean, it's amazing that we can keep people alive when a complete body system has failed entirely. So in some ways, it's absolutely phenomenal that we can do it. But at the same time, it takes a tremendous toll on the person's body. And so the best thing we can do is to keep people from needing dialysis in the first place. And obviously, once the kidneys are gone, often the eyesight is going, which has its own problems. Obviously, going blind is a huge disability and, you know, impairment in terms of people functioning. And then you get into the other disease where all of a sudden people are having amputations. So this is it's a horrible package deal that people get when their diabetes hasn't been controlled. And being able to control it both with the insulin cap, which has now been in place for a year and a half, and now with specific drugs on that list that they announced yesterday, which also help improve outcomes with people with diabetes and heart disease and other diseases of the immune system, all of these are relieve a tremendous amount of suffering of Americans who otherwise were unique in the industrialized world for being held hostage to these prices, which basically priced them out of the care that they needed.
And it's basically two-pronged right now as we stand here in August of 2024. We've seen a record in this administration with the president and the vice president making this a priority. Again, I said this a little bit earlier. Number one, if you're going to fight powerful entities like the pharmaceutical companies, like the other party that's getting a lot of money from the pharmaceutical companies, you have to have that will. And we have seen already benefits based on the will that the vice president and the president have shown. But then there's also the future. What do you think the stakes are based on what you know about the vice president and her policies when it comes to this, and based on what you know on the former president and his party's priorities when it comes to this issue?
Well, I mean, clearly, repealing the Inflation Reduction Act is right there in Project 2025. So, I mean, this very benefit that people are now going to start realizing they're going to remove if they have the power to do it through the legislature. And of course, they can always slow down implementation through the executive branch just being there. So there's all kinds of, they can refuse to negotiate. They have the power to negotiate. They could just refuse to exercise that power. So, I mean, they can make a change with regulations. And that's a huge part of Project 2025 is what can they do without even needing congressional action? Because obviously, in the Senate, the filibuster still exists. It takes a supermajority to move legislation. So there's a lot of damage they can do if Trump is once again president and you look at the people who he puts in working with him. So I think that's the first thing. We saw what they tried to do under his first administration. If it weren't for John McCain, they would have destroyed the Affordable Care Act. Millions of people would have lost their insurance. And so I think that, you know, that's how close it came to having millions of people hurt for no good reason. And there was no plan B. I mean, when he was president, Donald Trump kept talking about having something better. As usual with him, he doesn't produce the policy. He produces destruction, he produces harm to people, but he doesn't produce well thought out policy that you can even try and influence. It's just wrecking things and hurting people. And I think particularly incredibly vulnerable people like the ones I've taken care of, they cannot afford to do that. The Affordable Care Act, getting people onto the insurance rolls was a huge benefit so that your local community hospital all of a sudden had more assured revenue because people had insurance. They weren't coming in through charity care. So it was a huge benefit, particularly here in northern Wisconsin, where we have mostly rural hospitals. We had a lot of uninsured people. We have people who couldn't afford insurance because they were single, they were farmers. You know, they're not part of a group. They were small business people. So this was a huge benefit to northern Wisconsin. And having all of that destroyed just hurts us all, hurts our communities, hurts the overall system by which we keep people healthy and take care of them when they get sick.
And I guess to wrap it up, I will say for myself, if it wasn't for the Affordable Care Act, I would be paying for a hospital stay or two hospital stays I had back in 2020 for the rest of my life. And instead, I was able to get a bill, pay off what the cost was, but also insurance through the Affordable Care Act has allowed me not to go broke because I got sick. And I guess, you know, I guess asking you again, you've dealt with a lot of patients over the years. Bottom line is, you shouldn't have to go broke to get well, correct?
Exactly. Oh, no, and it's been one of the most common causes of personal bankruptcy is medical expenses. And so everything we can do to keep moving towards where we have a system that isn't any more complex than it needs to be. Already, currently, it's way more complex than it needs to be. And what it does is so people are assured the care they need and they don't end up with the surprise billing, which, again, the Biden-Harris administration has addressed. It's not perfect yet, but they've moved the puck down the ice. You know, let's not forget it. We don't, just because we haven't arrived at perfect doesn't mean we have a lot of good has not already been done. So I think that's the key thing to remember. These things do take time. It took several years to get the Affordable Care Act to where it was actually implemented. You pass the Inflation Reduction Act. It takes 2 years to negotiate. It takes time to solve these problems. They're large, complex problems. They have large, complex solutions. Anybody who thinks there's a simple solution to these problems doesn't understand the problem, is what I can tell you. And so, yay for Biden and Harris accomplishing more in 2 years when they had a legislature that was functioning than people had done for decades.
And I guess along that line, to add to that final note, you got to have people that are fighting for it, or else nothing
absolutely
will get done. And Vice President Harris has shown in her career that this is an important issue, and I think people need to realize that as well.
Oh, absolutely. No, this, she has been on the side of this, and I think that's why I'm certainly hopeful that she will continue the traditions, which go back almost over a century and definitely decades, and over the last 2 years of all the good things that have been done, and just keep building on it. And that's what we need.
Dr. Brian Ewart, thank you very much for your time and really good information. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
And we will come back and have our final segment, our daily history lesson, coming up next. The time is 9:49. Chad Holmes Show on 98.9 WXCO. Welcome back. Chad Holmes with you. 98.9 FM, 1230 AM, WXCO. Online, BowFallsRadio.com. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO. And on the Civic Media app. Today is Monday, August the 19th of 2024. It is day number 232 of this year. There are 134 days remaining in the year. And we are down to 78 days between now and Election Day. And some famous events have occurred on this date in history. 103 years ago, on this date in 1921, Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry was born. On this date in 1976, 48 years ago, Gerald Ford, President of the United States, won the Republican presidential nomination over Ronald Reagan at the GOP National Convention in Kansas City. In fact, that was the last national convention that there was doubt who was going to win the nomination going into Kansas City. Ford and Reagan split almost down the middle. And in the end, Ford was able to get the delegates needed to ultimately win the nomination, go on to take on Jimmy Carter in the general election. On this date in 2004, the internet search engine Google went public. On this date in 2006, a team of Australian scientists launched a multi-million dollar project to fight global warming through a reduction in bovine flatulence. The goal was to breed cows that produce more milk with less methane excretion. On this date in 2020, 4 years ago, Apple became the first U.S. company to be valued at $2 trillion. That was just 2 years after it reached a $1 trillion valuation. On this date in 2022, Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck wed yet again. 1 month after their surprise Las Vegas nuptials, the couple held a full weekend bash at the actor's estate in Riceboro, Georgia. The bad news is Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez have again split up. So second time was not the charm. Could there be a third time in the future? We'll have to wait and see. Some famous people are celebrating their birthdays today. Former President Bill Clinton, he will be a part of the festivities at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, the former president turning 78 years old today. Actor Gerald McRaney, star of Simon and Simon and also Major Dad, turned 77 years old today. Actor Jim Carter of Downton Abbey is 76. Jonathan Frakes, you know who Jonathan Frakes is.
Sounds familiar.
He played Will Riker on Star Trek The Next Generation. So Commander Riker. So Jonathan Frakes of Star Trek The Next Generation, 72 years old today. Actor Peter Gallagher of American Beauty, The OC and Others is 69. John Stamos, Full House, General Hospital, Fuller House, 61 years old today. Actor Kira Sedgwick of The Closer, also Mrs. Kevin Bacon. Kira Sedgwick is 59 years old today. Actor Kevin Dillon of Entourage fame is 59. Former MTV reporter Tabitha Soren is 57 years old today. And Melissa Fumero, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, is 42. If you out there celebrating your birthday today, happy birthday to you from all of us at 98.9 and 1230 WXCO. Some special events being acknowledged today. It is Orangutan Day. It is Talk Like Jar Jar Binks Day. It is Aviation Day. It is Hot and Spicy Food Day. It is Potato Day. It is Stay Home With Your Kids Day. It is Sandcastle and Sculpture Day. Nice. It is Soft Ice Cream Day. It is World Humanitarian Day, and it is World Photo Day.
Nice.
All right. It is time again for the final segment of the program.
Start of a new week with new numbers.
Yep. Our number for the day quiz with Ian Welsh. And again, we give Ian three different choices at the end of every show to try to guess our number for the day. Based on the math, you need to get one out of three right, 33%, to be average. So anything above 33% is an above-average winning week. And he's had a lot of winning weeks in a row here. We may have to up the bar for what a winning week is because it's starting to get a little too easy for you. But nevertheless, we'll hope to get another good week off. You were 3-for-4 last week for 75%, which
was
darn close to your record, which is 80%. But our number for the day quiz.
Okay.
I did not give you a hint earlier, so you don't even have any idea what the subject matter is.
No clue.
But our number for the day is the number of bathrooms in the White House.
Number of bathrooms in the White House.
Of course, the bathrooms in the White House are very important bathrooms.
Oh, yes.
And a pretty big facility because not only that's where the president lives, that's where the president and his staff work.
Oh, yes.
And they hold many events at the White House. So how many bathrooms are in the White House? Is the correct answer 34 bathrooms? That's A. Okay. Is the correct answer B, 54 bathrooms? Is the correct answer C, 74 bathrooms?
34, 54, 74.
So how many bathrooms are in the White House?
Oh, boy. That's a lot of bathrooms.
That's a number it is. I know, isn't it?
34, 54, 74. Well, the White House is pretty big, and a lot of people work there. So I'm going to say there are probably 54 bathrooms in the White House. I'm going to go with a B. That's my final answer. I'm going to stick with that.
All right. The number of bathrooms in the White House is 34.
Oh, it was the least amount.
Yep, the least amount. So 34 bathrooms in the White House.
Well, at
34.
Least you learned something, people. You learned something new.
So if you go to the White House, you'll know there's 34 bathrooms there. All right, Ian. Well, have yourself a great rest of your Monday.
You too, Chad. Happy Monday, everybody.
And everybody, make sure you join us again tomorrow. We will be back from 8 till 10 a.m. And again, stick around throughout the rest of the day. We have lots of live programming from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Starting next with Matt and Air on Air. That's straight ahead. Chad Holmes Show, 98.9 WXCO.